So as you said, my name is Nadim. I'm the research director at Frontline SMS Medic. We are a nonprofit organization based out of the Bay Area initially, and our mission is to create connected, coordinated health systems that ultimately save lives. We've operated primarily in the rural developing world, and the tools that we've chosen to use while I'm talking here today, it focuses around cell phones, and specifically SMS and text-based technologies. So over the next 20 minutes, I'd like to show you and illustrate to you why we've chosen the route to use mobile health technology and how we've employed it to combat some very profound health issues in the developing world. I'll also, since we're talking about research and actual data, I'll share with you some statistics from our six-month pilot in Malawi that are, in my opinion, very exciting. So before I jump into that, I need to take you back to the very beginning of all this, sort of how it started for us, so you understand the route of progression. And for us, it really started with a very depressing, sobering statistic, namely that there is a 4.4 million health worker shortage worldwide. And this is coming from the World Health Organization. And if you look at the countries that are experiencing this critical shortage in health service providers, it's, you know, much of Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, parts of Central America, countries like Papua New Guinea. And these shortages are experienced in terms of doctors, nurses, community health workers, other service providers like midwives. And I'd like you to sort of take a mental snapshot of this map in your mind. I'm sure a lot of you have photographic memories, or you can take out your cell phone and take a photo. And I'd like to show you a couple other maps, so keep this in mind. This one, you're probably very familiar with, is the global proportional burden of HIV and AIDS. I can see it's disproportionately centered on Africa and South Asia. This one is the global density of tuberculosis prevalence. And this third map is the endemicity of malaria. I don't mean to focus on these big three diseases. If you were to look at neglected tropical diseases, things like cholera or leishmaniasis, I promise you the picture would be very similar. So let me take you back to the first map I showed you, which was the critical shortages in healthcare providers. And you'll notice that these maps superimpose almost perfectly. And you know, that's really interesting. Is this a coincidence that these countries that are experiencing the greatest burden in terms of these tremendous diseases are also the countries that have critical shortages in health service providers? Well, the World Health Organization investigated that question in 2006. And in a landmark report, they concluded that, in fact, health workers save lives. So that might not be shocking to many of you. But the way they explicated this in the report, it was very compelling. And they showed that as the density of health workers increased, the probability of survival for mothers and children in this case, but also for other communities, that also increased. And so when we started to think about how we can address these health problems in the developing world, we knew that an intervention had to focus on health workers, that these needed to be at the centerpiece of any sort of an intervention, because in many situations, especially when you have patients who are at a distance from a clinic, their only connection to a healthcare system is through a health worker. So that was sort of part one of our thinking. The second component is what you're all very intimately familiar with, cell phones. So these are Maasai tribesmen in Kenya. And you can see that they're very familiar with cell phone technology. They know how to make voice calls. They know how to text. This is a child in Mali. And he's, you know, not so unlike an American child who can't wait to get his first cell phone. He's so excited that he's fashioned one out of mud and a twig. Granted, he only has 9 keys, so I imagine he'll have tremendous difficulty checking his voicemail. Bad joke, okay. I was told I needed more humor in my talk, so it's my best effort. But you know, the point I'm trying to get at is that this technology is not alien in the developing world. So Kurt was talking about the ubiquity of cell phones in the US. It is extremely prevalent in the developing world. And it's spawned all sorts of informal economies. This is a phone shop. It's not uncommon to see things like cell phone charging stations as a source of revenue. I don't want to throw a lot of statistics at you, but there are three things that I think are worth knowing. First, 64% of all cell phone users are in the developing world, globally. And by 2012, half of all individuals in the most remote parts of the planet will have cell phones, which is incredible. Interesting side note, this is not related to the talk, but the 5 billionth cell phone subscriber was recently recorded by Ericsson back in July. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's amazing. 5 billion people have cell phones. Anyway, the third fact, the fastest area of growth for cell phone coverage and cell phone technology is projected to occur and is actually occurring now in Asia, Africa, much of the Middle East. These are the countries we've been talking about that are also experiencing these health shortages and this tremendous disease burden. And so we thought to ourselves, how can we opportunistically use this boom in cell phone technology to address these healthcare issues in the developing world. And what we came up with, we piloted it in Malawi first, and I'll explain it to you in great detail, I promise. Our executive director, Josh Nesbitt, his family has done a great deal of work in Namatete in Malawi, which is, it's very near Lilongwe, which is kind of at the center of this map. And also our other co-founder, Isaac Holman, is currently in Namatete, and he's doing great work for us. So Namatete is, it's a very rural place, relatively impoverished, mostly mud brick houses with thatched roofing, and if they have roads at all, they're typically dirt roads, so the infrastructure is very minimal. But they do have a hospital, St. Gabriel's Hospital in Namatete. It has two doctors who are trying to provide care for 250,000 people, spread out in every direction 100 miles. So you can imagine how difficult that is, especially when you have patients who have, you know, tuberculosis and HIV, where you need to be taking, you know, cocktails of medications on a daily basis. How are you supposed to monitor a patient like that when they're 40 miles away from you and you hardly have any staff? Well, part of the solution has been to use a model that was initially propagated by Partners in Health, and that is to use community health workers. And these community health workers, or CHWs as we call them usually, are locally recruited volunteers from these villages that are given various tasks to assist with healthcare provision for patients. Things such as, you know, walking to the clinic to request emergency care or to request medication for patients back in the villages, or sometimes they'll escort patients or deliver appointment status updates for patients. And you know, many of them have bikes, but I'd say the majority do not. So this one here is lucky enough to have a bike, but it's not unusual for a health worker to walk 30 or 40 or 50 miles, sometimes just deliver a very rudimentary record, you know, which is a paper record, which can be lost or stolen. They're frequently illegible, very prone to error. And so, you know, this system, while it's better than having just two doctors, is still, the fidelity of the system and the efficiency of the system was still not very good. We were aware of a piece of technology, a software platform called Frontline SMS, which was created by a man named Ken Banks. And what it does, it turns a computer into a two-way text messaging hub. So you plug a cell phone into a laptop or a GSM modem, and that number that is associated with that cell phone becomes dedicated to the laptop. So you can send text messages into the laptop. You can send and receive text messages as if it was a phone. But you can also add users. You can put different numbers into folders. You can mass message contacts. The software can also be programmed to automate responses or auto-forward messages based on keyword responses. So it's a very robust piece of software, and you can do a lot of things with it. And what we decided to do was to try and create a text messaging network among the different community health workers and the physicians, so that they could sort of bridge this communication gap between the patients and physicians. And Josh Nesbitt got a small grant from Stanford, and we purchased 75 recycled Motorola Pebble cell phones and a laptop. We installed Frontline SMS on it and brought those to St. Gabriel's Hospital. We distributed those 75 cell phones to health workers and held training sessions. I know I was talking about the ubiquity of cell phones in the developing world, but actually many of these workers had not seen or ever worked with a cell phone. And on the order of hours, they were able to understand how the network operated, how to turn the phone on, how to send text messages, how to add contacts and make voice calls. It was really, really amazing to see, and this has been replicated, you know, in many of our pilot sites. We've seen this over and over again, that people who are unfamiliar with the technology can grasp it very quickly. We were fortunate enough to get cell phone solar chargers for these workers as well that were donated so they could charge the phones on the go. And you know, once we had completed the trainings, we held brainstorming sessions. It was never our model to go into a clinic and show them the technology and then tell them what to do with it. We showed them what was possible with the technology, and then we asked them, how do you think you can use this? How do you think you can use this network to enhance your daily activities and simplify things for yourself? And what they came up with were some really brilliant, elegant solutions, and I'll share a few of them with you right now. One of the most intuitive usage cases they came up with, emergency care. Say there's an injury 40 miles away from the clinic. That patient can contact their local health worker, who then sends an SMS text message to the clinic that's received at the laptop that's running Frontline SMS. And because the first word in the text is emergency, it is automatically forwarded to the response personnel, who's basically a home-based care nurse with a motorcycle. He receives a text message saying, emergency, patient X in village Y has this condition, needs emergency help. Then he hops on his motorcycle and dispatches himself directly to that village. And so over 6 months, we received 150 of these texts that were responded to in emergency situations by the response personnel. And this is Alex. He is St. Gabriel's response personnel. He is the home-based care nurse with the motorcycle. And before we implemented anything, he was driving from village to village, sort of stochastically, just to see if he was needed, in a very ad hoc fashion. And now he has a cell phone, and he receives forwarded texts whenever there's an emergency. So he will respond specifically to those instances. In this way, they've set up a triage system that, you know, allows for greater expediency of service and has also saved them an enormous amount of money. Over 6 months, they saved $3,500 in fuel alone, just because he wasn't making these useless trips around Malawi. Another usage case, patient tracking. Say you have a patient that's due for an appointment and they don't show up. That clinic can send a text message to that patient's local health worker saying that this patient did not show up. The CHW will then check up on the patient to see what happened and send a status report back to the clinic. So, you know, say the patient was, you know, busy with family affairs or with work and had to reschedule or was too ill to make it, they can at least inform the patients or the physicians so that the patients and the physicians are on the same page. The way this was done before the network, these community health workers would walk back and forth to the clinic on a biweekly basis with these status updates. And since they're just sending text messages now, they were able to save on net over the 75 health workers over 6 months. They saved 2,100 hours of time because they weren't walking back and forth for 40 miles. And that's not trivial at all. These health workers have, you know, so many things they could be doing with that time. They could be conducting outreach. They could be, you know, holding community sessions for, you know, healthy practice reminders and sanitation reminders with the community. So this has really, you know, transformed the way that they can do their job. A third usage case, symptom monitoring. Say a patient presents with new symptoms. They can tell their health worker, who then communicates those symptoms to the clinic. A physician reads the new symptoms, and depending on what's indicated, say they're very severe and warrants a visit to the clinic, they can text the health worker and you know, in real time basically give medical advice. The way this was primarily done at St. Gabriel's Hospital, there were a lot of patients with tuberculosis. And I'm sure many of you know that if you have tuberculosis, not that many of you have tuberculosis, but I'm sure many of you know the treatment for tuberculosis. If you have TB, you're supposed to take a daily cocktail of medication, right, for 6 months. And the World Health Organization found that the most effective way to ensure adherence was to actually have somebody physically watch you take the meds every day. That's called DOTS, directly observed therapy short term. And so now what they're doing, they have the health workers visit all the tuberculosis patients on a daily basis. They watch them take their medications, and then they send a text message at the end of the day saying, I have indeed watched all of my patients take their medications. And if the clinic does not receive an adherence update for a patient, they'll just text the local health worker and ask for an update. By increasing the efficiency of this communication pipeline, they were able to take on twice the number of patients in their tuberculosis treatment program, which is a really, really notable outcome. And so here's sort of a visual representation of how they did this. They have a map with all the different districts that St. Gabriel's provides care to, and they have a pin for every health worker, and they've sort of, you know, put those pins where they're located, and there's a phone number attached to each one. So if they have a patient in a certain district for whom they haven't received an update, they'll just find the local health worker and send them a text. Finally, this is what seems to be a very elementary usage case, but something so simple as trying to get, you know, 100 health workers in the same place at the same time for a training session can be so difficult when you don't see them regularly. So now they just, you know, they'll blast out a mass text message saying, reminder, there's a training session on Tuesday at 2 p.m. Make sure you're there. And they've been able to hold much more effective sessions with better attendance in this way. So just to kind of rehash the impact at 6 months in our pilot, they saved $3,500 in motorcycle fuel. And I'm sure you're wondering, how much did it cost to run this network? Once we had invested the initial capital, it cost $500 to run the network, the SMS texting network. So it was actually tremendously cost-saving for them in the end. They saved 2,100 hours in staff time, as I mentioned, and probably the most notable outcome is the doubled enrollment in the TB treatment program. So all this is published at the citation below in the Journal of Technology and Healthcare if you want more information on it and background on the pilot. It's a tremendously well-written paper, I should say. I was responsible for most of the text, so it's actually terribly written, so you should adjust your expectations accordingly. Another outcome that, you know, was less quantifiable is its empowerment. So I mentioned before that these health workers, you know, they're volunteers. They don't do this for a salary. They don't get paid for this. They're doing it because their friends and family are literally dropping dead from, you know, tuberculosis and AIDS. So, you know, having a cell phone, gives them a way to take on more responsibility in terms of healthcare provision for their family and friends and their patients, and has really transformed them into these status symbols in the community. If anybody has a health issue, they know to go to these people with cell phones. And it's really changed the way that the health workers sort of carry themselves around. So I've shown you sort of the basics of Frontline SMS, but there's a lot more that the technology can do. There's something called Frontline Forms, where if you have a Java-enabled cell phone, as shown on the left, you can create customizable forms at a clinic. Simple things like checkboxes, text fields, numeric fields, date fields, and download those forms on these cell phones. And health workers can fill out the forms in the field and send back entire forms of data back to the clinic. It's sent via SMS and then unpacked locally at the clinic. So you can actually send much more than 160 characters using a single text message using Frontline Forms. And all the data is aggregated into a database, into spreadsheets, so you can perform data analysis and track forms over time. And the way we've used this in some of our field sites, one very common usage case is for referrals. So we first piloted this in Bangladesh, and now it's also in Malawi. If you have a hospital that is a major hospital that's diagnosing a patient, and they're going to refer them for treatment at a more local clinic, maybe to pick up medications or follow-up treatment, they send a form to that clinic with the patient ID information, their name, the date, perhaps medication refills they need, other follow-up treatment. That clinic then knows to expect that patient, and once that patient shows up, they can return a text to the hospital and close that referral loop, basically saying, yes, we have indeed received this patient, things are taken care of. And so if the patient does not show up after a certain number of days, they know that the patient has been delinquent, they can text the hospital and ask them to communicate with the local health worker to follow up with the patient and see what happened. And so this is, you know, it's very elegant, and it's really cracked down big time on loss to follow-up rates. You know, many patients slip through the cracks between referrals, and it's important to catch them and make sure that they show up for their appointments. Another interesting one, stock levels. So if you're working with a bigger institution that, say, coordinates care from multiple clinics, you know, these clinics, they might report to one central agency or central administrative head or NGO, and they all have different stock levels of supplies. So, you know, they might have different levels of antibiotics or pharmaceutical supplies, different levels of contraceptives or surgical gloves, things like this. They can fill out inventory forms and send those to a central office where all of that data is monitored in spreadsheets. So if you have a clinic that is at critical stock levels, say they're down to, you know, 5 units of nevirapine, which is a big deal, right? They send in an inventory form that indicates that they're at critical levels. The central office then knows that, and they can restock based on needs. Stopping stockouts is a huge issue. They're extremely common, and patients frequently can't get medication simply because they're not available. And it's a logistical issue. They don't know which clinics need supplies. I went too far. What I wanted to show you is that we've expanded since our initial pilot in Malawi to 11 countries. My implementation work has mostly been in Bangladesh. I'll be back there this winter. And we've really gone from an organization that uses this software tool, Frontline SMS, to one that creates and implements dedicated software tools for healthcare applications. The first major release that we had was something called Patient View back in August. And it's an electronic medical record system. It's free, it's lightweight, and it can be updated remotely by health workers in the field. Health workers can fill out forms on patients, send that data back to the clinic, and those forms are automatically appended to unique patient records. And this is something that, you know, has not been done before, that allows physicians to monitor patients over time and space. And you know, this is, you know, we think this is going to make a huge impact for a lot of small clinics that try and cater to rural populations. It's been downloaded hundreds of times as being piloted right now in Malawi primarily. Mali. Auto categorization is another thing. You know that with texting, it's very common to have typos. So how is that handled when you have a system that, you know, relies on automation? Well, Dimafuna Montuala, I currently need medicine. That's clearly misspelled, right? Well, that's in Chichewa. It is misspelled. The Dimafuna Montuala, the technology, the artificial intelligence first normalizes the spelling as best it can. Then it segments the words into phonemes and identifies predictor particles that tell it, you know, what is the most likely message that's trying to be communicated. In this case, I need medicine. Then it automatically categorizes that as a request for aid. So if you're trying to perform statistics on the network and see how it's being used most commonly, you know, this can do it for you instead of, you know, having to manually go through all the messages and bin them yourself. Finally, one of the most exciting things on the cusp of being piloted through our field sites is something through a partnership with Professor Idagon Ozjan at UCLA. He's a technology called Lucos. And using a standard camera phone on a cell phone, any cell phone, you can basically perform simple blood tests and diagnostics. What you do, you strap on an LED light onto the camera phone, then you take a blood sample, insert that, put that on a glass slide, put that glass slide between the lens and the CCD chip on the camera, which is where the camera actually records the data, and you snap a photo, and you see something like this. I promise you, I went down firsthand to see this, the technology. What you're looking at are cells. These are shadows or holographic images of cells. And they've programmed software algorithms that can identify, based on shape, size, and morphology, you know, that's a red blood cell, that's a neutrophil, that's a lymphocyte, that's bacteria. So you can do complete blood counts. You can diagnose bacteremia or parasitemia. You can diagnose malaria with this technology. And it can be done at the point of care. This is amazing because a community health worker who doesn't have formal medical training can perform a blood test at the point of care, take a photo of that blood sample, send it to the clinic where the software is run, and a diagnosis is sent back to them on the order of minutes. So we really think this is going to revolutionize the way that point of care diagnostics are handled. And so I bring you back to the mission statement that I mentioned in the beginning. What we're trying to do is to help create connected, coordinated health systems that ultimately save lives. And I hope that I've shown you, or at least given you a teaser of how we've been striving to do that in the developing world. And so I know I'm running out of time, but before I stop talking, we have a cell phone donation campaign, a national campaign that we launched last year called Hope Phones. You can access it at hopephones.org, and you can donate old phones for free. Let me go back to that. For free, and we pay for the shipping. You just print out a shipping label, and you can send it to our factory where everything's processed, and we repurpose phones for use in the developing world. If you're like me, I'm delinquent in this as well. I just got an iPhone 4, which is awesome, by the way. It's a great piece of technology. But my old phone is sitting in a drawer collecting dust. And we're in a society where we're accustomed to hanging on to things that we paid good money for, but honestly, we're not using them. And a cell phone in the hands of a health worker can help provide care for 200-plus families. So I strongly encourage you to think about donating your old phones and visit hopephones.org. So again, my name is Nadim. I'm the research director at Frontline SMS Medic. And if you have questions, you can ask during the panel or find me later or email me. So thanks so much. I can take one or two questions, if you have any. Yeah, good. Right. Right, so there was an initial capital cost to buy the cell phones and the hardware. And so, buying the laptop and all the cell phones cost about $3,500. Once that initial investment was made, it cost $500 to maintain the network. That was mostly for texting costs. The software is free, and that's why we decided to try out this national cell phone recycling campaign to offset the hardware costs for our partners. Yeah. Yep.
What kind of time or expense for the healthcare professional to monitor the text messages?
I would say not very much. They typically stop in, they have like a dedicated office where they have the laptop running, and physicians will check it maybe every half hour and respond to a couple texts. And several people on the staff respond to queries depending on their expertise level. So they really handle it in a way that doesn't really impede too much on their everyday practice, I would say. Yeah, in the back. You can actually also donate old like MP3 players and old electronics as well. It's primarily cell phones, but we also accept like old CD players, Discmans, MP3 players. The stuff you send us doesn't actually go abroad to Africa. We refurbish everything and resell it, and then we use those monetary credits to buy appropriate phones. So if you give us a BlackBerry, we're not going to put a BlackBerry in the hands of a health worker necessarily, because that technology is we try and work with lowest common denominator stuff. So good. Thanks.